you cannot remove fear just by ignoring it. I think the best way to acknowledge fear is to imagine that it's a demon and you invite it inside your house. You offer tea in your finest china and you give all of your attention and you listen to the message that it's trying to convey in a state of mental clarity. Because I think that basically an emotion has a vibration and it has information encoded in it. And if you have a fear, there's a reason. And I think it's important to listen and to extract that information. Like, okay, my fear is I don't want to go on stage because I feel I'm not ready. Okay, why do I feel I'm not ready? Like, can I have a sober conversation with that demon to understand? And I mean demon metaphorically here, but the metaphor itself is the tool, right? And maybe my conclusion is, you know what? I'm going to practice 40 minutes more on my speech. I'm going to rehearse it 3 times more. And then I'm kind of liberated from that fear.
Welcome to the show about new ideas on how we live, work, and connect. This is Bori Vik, your host, and in the following episode, together with my guests and listeners, we are again in search of something different.
Hi, Karim. Welcome back on the show. For everybody listening, we actually decided to go for a second round of interviews or conversations, rather, and I'm really happy that you're here again.
Thank you. Let's see where this goes.
When we were talking in the previous episode, you mentioned something about the different layers of intellect. The 16 layers of intellect. Do you remember?
Of intelligence.
Intelligence.
Yeah.
So what other layers do we have?
I mean, I have to preface this with the fact that, like, you know, yoga has studied this for thousands of years and I'm not an expert on the topic.
This comes from yoga.
So, well, this is yogic theory. These are ancient yogic scriptures that have kind of outlined that. And you have mind, you have ego, you have the soul. And intellect is one of them. And I think that we're just at a point in time where we're looking to see all the other layers. And it's very interesting to see, at least what I'm very interested in right now, is what skill set is required to thrive in the world right now. I think that's a very interesting question, because I think that a lot of people perhaps feel like they aren't thriving or aren't, and maybe aren't even aware of it. We have a very elaborate, like, attention industrial complex that manages to capture us and to hook into our psyches and manages to amplify states that we don't control. I think outrage, fear, anxiousness are some of those. I think when you're in those states, you have less say and you have less clarity and you have less, like, you lose the wheel, right? Yeah. You're not in the driver's seat anymore. And I think that there is a real economy around taking the wheel from people on their own agency and on their own, what's the right word here? Intention and focus and clarity. And I think that it's a very interesting time because, I mean, this is kind of like a negatively framed metaphor, but there's a kind of an arms race that we've started now between I call it the attention industrial complex with inverted quotas, but I think that's what it should be called, right? The ad economy, whatever you want to call it, right?
Ad economy.
The ad economy, like the advertisement economy.
Wow.
You know, I mean, Facebook, TikTok, news sites. Any company whose revenue is proportionate to the amount of attention they can get from you, right? Which normally follows an ad model. And I think that there's a kind of an arms race right now that's happening, where the game that we're playing is that we're trying to hijack people's psyches in order to capture their attentions. And I mean, let alone non-ethical, but just, you know, the end justifies the means. I mean, we still live in a jungle, right? And we have preys and predators, and we're replicating some of our biases that we had from the jungle, right? But we're just playing it out on each other. And I think that we have already entered an arms race between attention seeker and attention subject, or whatever you want to call it, the person whose attention is trying to be sought. And I think that this creates a very interesting dynamic where we as individuals are challenged to channel our mind in ways that it becomes harder for these players, for these institutions, to take control from us. And I don't want this to be a kind of like evil good guy dynamic either, because it's just the way it is. And it's just that
It's a system.
It's a system. And, you know, once you create shareholder value, I mean, you're not going to close that tap. So let's take it for what it is and let's not demonize it. Let's not try and hate at it right now because that's not where our attention should go. I think our attention should really go inwards on trying to control our minds. And that is the true revolution, I think.
There's a few things that came up right now. So first of all, you said, what are the skills that we need to have in the future? And when you said that, I thought that you meant, like, should we know how to say better prompts, or should we be able to see the big picture? Or so that's what I thought, like maybe in the workforce, but you meant more like how to take control of your life.
Or well, what about having better prompts for your own mind? What if people had clarity? I mean, basically, you know, the human body is the most elaborate technology we know of, and it's already there. We don't even know how to use it. And we're trying to create something else that actually replicates it. Because what is AI? AI is us trying to understand ourselves by recreating ourselves, right? Like we're trying to reproduce how a neural network in a brain works by creating it outside of it. And what if some of that energy was directed inwards, that we actually read the manual of the technology that we already inhabit?
Yeah, I think both. I think this is actually a super interesting way we are creating a mirror on our body, on our society. And like we just duplicate everything. Mm-hmm. But in order to duplicate something, you need to get to know it. Mm-hmm. It's not going to work without us understanding it. So I'm not sure if I said this on this podcast or not, but just for the sake of like everybody listening, I'm going to repeat this particular thing. When I was still working in corporate, I heard an Alan Watts speech, and he draw conclusion that we are on a journey to create reality. And we started by drawing first on the walls of the caves, and it was not real enough. So then we came up with like, okay, now let's learn how to draw better, and then let's learn how to paint. And paintings were not real enough. So then we came up with photography. And then we have photography, black and white, and then we made it colored, and then we realized, or then we made it like a videography. We put the pictures next to each other because we wanted them to move as well, because movement is also really part of how we are experiencing reality, you know, like how we are experiencing each other, like the whole movement can differ from people to people. And then I don't think that there is going to be a point when somebody says, let's not do that anymore. I mean, some people can say, but us as a society...
Let's not do technology anymore?
Let's not recreate reality.
Okay, yeah.
As species, we are on a journey to recreate reality. Mm-hmm. That's what we do.
Yes.
This is one of our purpose.
Yes.
And
I see that.
I don't think it's going to stop.
Me neither.
And therefore, there's going to be a possibility that once we're going to get to the point that we'll create a reality that not only looks like another reality, but it also feels like another reality. We'll feel the wind in our hair, and we'll feel touch, we'll feel heat, we'll feel anything that we are feeling in reality. And then when we get to that point, there's not going to be a possibility to say what is reality and what is real, what is not reality. And I heard this when I was still working in corporate, and also I realized that we are really getting our whole experience up in the cloud. So that was the first time that we started to use the word cloud. We're talking about 2014 or 15. And I just realized how much I'm different from my parents, knowing that, for example, they have lexical knowledge. I don't have much lexical knowledge because I don't need to have lexical knowledge. I have a phone and I can look up everything.
So you mean trivia, like knowing random facts?
Yeah. Like my parents know like lot of historical events,
right,
of like how, right, you know, like things that is not so necessary for me to remember. And then
interesting,
they still use that part of their brain. And then I feel that my generation already uploaded that part of our brains to the cloud. And then I realized that I'm using Facebook and using it. Then it was only Facebook, and that I'm uploading all my memories slowly but surely. I'm uploading parts of my brain that was supposed to be in my brain and uploading it to a storage space. And then I realized that at one point I will not necessarily need this body because it needs to be maintained. It gets sick, it gets old, it has, you know, at one point we'll maybe get to the conclusion that we don't actually need this. So that's when I decided to become a digital nomad and I started to travel, because I was like, this is a big risk that I'm not going to see the world as it is once we get to that point. And I just want to experience as much as possible. So that's
interesting that that's the reason. Okay, wow.
That's why I started traveling, yeah. And going back to the previous topic, this will be one of the skills that I think we will need to know, is how to create a reality. And then I think this we are getting into that point that we are duplicating a reality.
I agree with that. But I think that the joke of it is that we already are creating reality, but we don't even realize it. So we're trying to recreate reality somewhere else so that we can reverse engineer how it works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think that it helps us to understand the brain to create neural networks, because it is harder to look inward than it is to look outwards. Like, we are in the era of the intellect, and the intellect is one of the many types of intelligence, as we touched on a little bit. But the intellect, what it does is it separates, it compartmentalizes, it dissects, right? It's a scalpel, if you want to see it as a tool. Now, using the intellect to make sense of something, to recreate something, you have to understand the different parts. So you're like, oh my God, okay, the brain is that. Okay. So, and now people are like trying to create a theory of consciousness. So what is that? Like, as if like one formula is going to do the trick. But I think that one place where the intellect fails is looking inward into the creation that we're already doing. I mean, I'm a firm believer that each and every one of us is creating a reality at this very moment. At this very moment where I put my intention, I am co-creating the present moment with everybody else, with my mind, with my visualizations. And I think that at the same time as there should be external creation through technology, because you can't put a stop, right? I mean, this whole performative thing of Elon Musk and all these guys kind of signing this paper doesn't work around stopping AI, right? But I think that what people need to realize is that we are already creators, but we're just not aware of it.
Mm-hmm.
This may sound abstract to some, but it's true.
No, I think it's very, very, very true. So, for example, you were talking about the attention before, and I just read it somewhere that life is where you put your attention. And it can go in a way that right now, when you're listening to this, you might hear a dog barking, but you might even don't realize this because you're focusing on my voice when I speak. Mm. It depends where you put your attention. Also, there's many things that are happening in this very moment. There's like people are in these houses next to us there, but we don't experience this because we don't put our attention. If you turn around and look, are they there? That would be your life that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
So where you put your attention, that is your life.
Mm-hmm.
So if you put your attention to doom scrolling on TikTok, which I'm really want to blame on that one, that is your life.
Mm-hmm.
That in that particular moment, that's what you're living. So where you put your attention, that's the one thing that's going to determine your life. And
absolutely.
Also, if you start thinking how to create a better life to yourself, you might need to come up with some prompts, as you said.
Mm-hmm.
What would be the prompts that you would give for yourself to?
Oof, that is a great question. First, I would set my intention, because I think everything is grounded in intention. I think intention is the seed of creation, right? So is my intention to, you know, at the highest level, right? Like, is my intention to create a world? This can sound a little bit kumbaya, but I mean, is my intention, you know, but genuinely, is my intention to create a world where everybody's thriving, or where everybody has the power to create the reality they truly want simultaneously, right? Mm. And there's no negative sum in there, right? It's not like, because I have what I have, then you can't have what you have, which is kind of, we're in this kind of, we're elbowing each other, right?
Mm.
In this reality right now, but you can step into a world of abundance. I don't think there's anything idealistic about that.
Mm.
Genuinely.
I wonder, did you know that there is a treaty between leaders, world leaders? They sat down one time and then they said, what would be the cause where we all need to have our conflicts aside and we need to sit down and then have like work together?
Mm.
And I find the whole thing funny. Like, why can't we just decide?
We need
like
a cause.
What if we just like we would decide like now?
Yes.
Existing like Monday would be the cause.
Right.
That's
and
hilarious. And one of the cause, like there's a few causes, but one of the causes when there's simultaneous diseases attacking humanity. So like
many pandemics at once.
Yeah. That's
so how many do you need for them to do it? Because we had one and that did not
many.
Happen. So. So at least three pandemics.
Yeah, at least all together happening at the same time. And there was another one. If there is another alien consciousness arriving,
then they would, all right, well, I don't know. Let's let's make it happen then.
Yeah.
But I think back to your previous question on prompts, now that I had time to think about it. So one of them would be setting my intention. So mm-hmm. what am I looking to create? And if that creation goes beyond me as an individual, it's probably more effective. Then I think that there's probably some general objectives, like what do I want in 3 months? What do I want in a year? What do I want in 3 years? And then also some principles, but those would be up for change and the objectives would be up for change. And I think everything would be up for change, right? But at least right now, if you ask me in time, I would say, put your awareness on what you want and not on what you don't want. Because mm-hmm. I think one of the mechanics of the mind that very few people genuinely understand and acknowledge and act according to is that the mind is only additive and multiplicative. It's not subtractive or divisive. What I mean by this is you can only add to the mind. You cannot remove from the mind. Let me give you an example. If I tell you, don't think about monkeys.
No. They just
appear.
Exactly.
There is no such thing as not to the mind. What you bring up takes up space, real estate, bandwidth, airtime, whatever you want to call it. So I think understanding that principle and being intentional with the fact that there is no subtraction. And I think a lot of people theoretically realize this, but in practice don't. So if my intention is to build a world where humanity and nature thrive together, and I put all my attention on Shell and BP, I'm giving the power of my attention to these institutions. I'm giving them bandwidth, and therefore I am co-creating with them. And I'm replicating what they do, and I follow their every move, right? So rather than putting my attention on what world I really want to create, I'm focusing on what I don't want, and therefore I become what I don't want. I become a rebel without a cause.
Yeah.
The cause is what I rebel against. Mm. I don't have my own vision.
I think here comes mind control. I used to listen to a lot of sad songs. Mm. A lot. Mm. That was like part of my identity. I don't know, like it was not a decision, but I just like really, and ta-da, I became depressed.
Oh my God, 1 + 1 = 2. I do the same, by the way.
I don't like anymore. Like I don't allow myself to listen to sad songs because I know that what effect it has on my brain. And recently I started a really cool little thing and I highly recommend it to you in the creation. Mm-hmm. Every morning when I have my morning coffee, I write down 10 things I'm grateful for, which is like common practice at this point, mm-hmm. I would say. But it's already really cool how you just like, you know, I'm raising my vibration. Let's put it that way. And
yes.
It's just like, oh, cool. And the other thing that I'm doing is after that, I'm having 10 things that I want that day. And it's not a to-do list. It's not like I want to finish this project or I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I want to get a flower or I want to have a good hug or I want to have, I don't know, I want to have a surprise. And I just make a list of silly things for me to start creating and to have like play with, like, if you can call it universe or play with, playing with creation.
Yeah.
And it comes back. And it's, I would say 60% of my creation comes back in a day. Now I started to do it. Like I understand that it's not necessarily comes in one day because sometimes I write down something 4 days later, it arrives. So sometimes it just, so now I'm putting out things that I actually want for myself in the long term as well, but I just write it down every day. And it's fascinating.
Gorgeous.
It's amazing. I love it so much.
I think I love that. And I want to add some caveat to what you're saying, because of course, as soon as you get into the inner world, it's all nuance and it's all balance. And a friend of mine told me, she said, you know, for the arrow, I don't remember the exact saying and I'm not doing justice. So if she's listening to this, she'll probably know. But for the arrow to be thrown, you have to pull it backwards.
Mm-hmm.
And in this context, sometimes to be propelled forward, you also have to meet the sadness. You have to meet the fear. You know, this is why religion is so powerful, because it manages to leverage metaphorical fables as a technology or as an interface for people to relate to the complex inner wirings, right? I mean, I don't think that, you know, these stories, they're not literal. It's just that it points to something. It points to a pattern. It points to a relationship. It points to an architecture, a geometry. And basically, what I'm saying is that sometimes, you know what, I'm going to have to listen to a sad song to be able to just acknowledge that sadness that's in me, that's residual. But anyway, linking it to the point that I'm making about religion, you know, sometimes metaphorical fables are helpful. And I do this with myself. Sometimes I imagine that emotions are like spirits, and you have the spirit or demons. I guess they're interchangeable, like, you know, D-A-E-mons, like in the old sense of the term. And that, for example, fear is a demon, and that you cannot remove fear just by ignoring it. I think the best way to acknowledge fear is to imagine that it's a demon and you invite it inside your house. You offer tea in your finest china and you give all of your attention and you listen to the message that it's trying to convey in a state of mental clarity. Because I think that emotions, basically an emotion has a vibration and it has information encoded in it. And if you have a fear, there's a reason, and I think it's important to listen and to extract that information. Like, okay, my fear is I don't want to go on stage because I feel I'm not ready. Okay, why do I feel I'm not ready? Like, can I have a sober conversation with that demon to understand? Mm. And I mean demon metaphorically here, but the metaphor itself is the tool, right? And maybe my conclusion is, you know what? I'm going to practice 40 minutes more on my speech. I'm going to rehearse it 3 times more. And then I'm kind of liberated from that fear. So back to, you know, the curated playlists, just going full circle on that one, I think that I would probably be very mindful of not listening to sad music 90% of the time. And I would be very intentional with the bandwidth. But then I also want to not be delusional if I have residual sadness that's there that needs to be dealt with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I think if it can be a really good tool, like sad movies as well, it can be really, really cool tool for you to create a safe space for your tea party with your sadness. Mm. and I do this as well sometimes. It happens, and I'm really playful with my emotions as well. I'm really, with my anger, for example, I can be super angry. And I channel, like, I used to be a travel blogger. I think I'm not anymore. I never know. But I realized at one point that, like, most of my writings were coming from anger. I channeled my anger to writing. So I always imagine somebody arguing with me and telling me
that's so interesting. I imagined someone arguing with me. That is so good.
Someone was just like, because it's,
that's so,
you know, telling me, like, you're a female, like, how can you travel alone, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, and I created something great out of it. And it was really motivational for other people because they needed to hear what I had to say. But I needed to have someone, I needed the arrow to be pulled back in order to shoot into the direction.
And also, I mean, I think, you know, you don't want to be creating from a place of anger, but I think it's Eckhart Tolle who said this. He said, so you look at the sky and you have all kinds of weather and you're okay with it and you accept it. Some people maybe don't accept winters, but why do you not accept that the inner weather is not is changing?
Mm.
You know?
Yeah.
And why does there have to be a storytelling layer on top saying this is bad, this is good, this is bad? Like, what if we, like, released our claws around the narratives that we had that interpret the way we feel?
Yeah, honestly, I'm really a fan, and I'm not sure how I'm standing with Access Consciousness. I don't know if you heard about them.
With
Access
what?
Consciousness.
Access Consciousness.
Yes, it's kind of a personal development theme.
No.
I have my doubts about them. The leaders, I cannot get on board. I think there's going to be some kind of sex scandal coming out of them pretty soon.
Okay, because, well, that's telling.
I'm not, So, but there's so many cool things that they say that I really am on board. And I use it, use various tools every day. Their original idea is that when you are in judgment, then you cannot be curious.
Yeah.
And so judgment and curiosity is kind of in the two ends of the pole. So when you're judging your feelings or judging anything, you're judging judgment, actually, then you don't have progress. You don't have a flow. So they usually use these questions that free you up from judgment. So they say, for example, we have this nice conversation right now. And then I would ask, how does it get any better? You know, it just opens up an amazing space. Mm-hmm. And I really like that it helped me not to be in judgment that much. I'm an extremely judgmental person in general. I'm coming from a right-wing family. So I was learned to be judgmental from a young age. Mm-hmm. So I went through a lot of change in my life as well. Clearly, I'm not right-wing anymore.
Right. But not all right-wing people are judgmental, I guess. I mean, it depends how extreme you are.
They were really judgmental at all. Mm. Yeah, they were really judgmental. So, I needed to de-learn how to be less judgmental. And the first thing that when I... It was not the first thing, it was a progress, but when I went to Burning Man the first time, I experienced this freedom of I don't need to judge people anymore. And it's not like they don't judge me, but like the fact that
you're not judging.
That I'm not judging
it's so
them.
Liberating, right?
It was, oh my God, it was, because it's impossible to judge anybody there because you usually judge by how they look and then how, you know, what they wear. And there's a few people who are dressing in a certain way that can be judged. We call them sparkle ponies. So we clearly are in judgment towards them, who are just like these influencers coming to Burning Man. But 99% of Burning Man is not consists of those people. And you cannot really decide who they are based on how they look because they are all, some people decide that they're going to be blue today. And then that's what, so what information do you deduct from that somebody decided to be the color blue on that day? And it was such a liberating thing that I didn't need to make judgment. I had nowhere to go from there. It was such an ease. There was such an ease coming out of this.
I mean, it's interesting because like there's this notion of the ability to respond with the world. And I think a lot of people unknowingly shut down their ability to respond. I think when you're a child, you have this unfiltered curiosity. You know, there's a tree, there's a cloud, there's a wall. You know, what is all this? And there's an inner realization that you are in interaction with everything all at once, right? And this is not some kind of abstract concept. This is genuine, you know? I mean, concretely, everything around you affects you at all time. And, you know, a lot of people, let's say in the current paradigm, are taught to kind of build walls around themselves. Imagine that you have a sphere around you and they just put little patches up where they're like, no, I don't want this. I don't want to deal with, you know, right-wing people. I don't want to deal with left-wing people. I don't want to deal with Burning Man people, you know, and then you just kind of, you patch yourself up until you're kind of blocking the flow of life coming towards you. And that at the core of what you are kind of shrivels up a little bit. And I think that's what judgment does. And of course, judgment is a toolbox from survival, right? Like we need to judge, is this a predator? Am I in danger? Should I run, right? I mean, there are very obvious reasons why judgment is a very important tool to keep in your toolbox. Because we're not above survival. Right? Mm. Humanity is not above survival. I mean, if we were, we would know. We would have gotten the memo. So that toolbox, that tool has to remain in the toolbox. However, I think that the tool is used and abused and we're just trigger happy as fuck. And we're just like, you know what? In case of doubt, I'm going to judge this as dangerous because then I'll be safe. And I'm going to build a fortress with walls so thick that I'm going to become an individual that's not even worth protecting anymore.
You know, I did a fascinating tantra course in Koh Phangan. It was led by a therapist who was actually coming on this podcast as well. And so she created such a space for 4 days where I was free to test out how it is to have my boundaries. And I realized that it is a skill to practice on how to set your boundaries, how to say what you desire and how to set your boundaries and say what you don't desire and what you don't want to happen to you. And unless you have those two skills, you're going to be building walls. You will have walls around you because then you don't know what is safe. You're not trusting yourself that you will be able to draw the line.
Yeah.
And of course, it's different if somebody is actually a predator and wants to like jump on you in the street. And, you know, like that's a different thing. But as soon as you know how to not be victimized by somebody else's opinion, for example, or even somebody is rejecting you, you're not taking it personally. I think that moment you will be able to let everybody come close to you. Mm. And then you deal with it when you have to deal with it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, it's really funny because I've been thinking a lot about the word boundaries lately. And at how much I feel like it gives the wrong image to people, that word. And it's bugging me, and I haven't quite come to a conclusion why, and maybe we can figure this out together. But to me, when I hear boundaries, I hear walls. And I hear, like, there's a wall, there's a line in the sand, and if you cross it, like, that's a no-no, right? So if you ask me to do this, I don't want to do it, and I'll just push back. And it creates a real distinction between me and you. And I think, like, maybe a model that is kind of forging in my mind that's more appropriate is, like, inner listening. And it's not so much about, like, because for me, boundaries is, like, this is the line in the sand, and I'm going to make a judgment, which is that this is the line in the sand, and people will have sort of these rigid views where they're like, I will never do this. I will never do that. I will never try this. I will never speak to that person. And those are my quote unquote boundaries, right? Mm. Because this is the kind of model that people have, right? They have a model, they have a sort of static model because, you know, I feel like every piece of wisdom that people give out, then 97% of the people will adopt the most simplistic version of that, right? Like, I think it's just logical because not everybody wants to think about that all day. I mean, yeah. We're here talking, we're doing this work because other people need to put their time and effort on other things, right? this is our role, you know? And I think that, back to this boundaries thing, I think that a lot of people mistake boundaries for fixed line in the sand, whereas it's a continuous inner listening and an inner, how do I feel about this? And then if your inner voice is really strong, then you don't need to set boundaries. It's going to be very clear what you want and what you don't want. And you're going to be like, actually, I want this. No, I feel like eating that. You know what? That's too expensive for me. I'm not going to buy that. You know what? This holiday, I want to spend alone, right?
Yeah, I think you're right. And on, you need to check in with yourself first. And you need to understand that you are changing as well in moments to moments. It's what was okay for you. half an hour ago, that might not be the case now. And for that, you need to have a good talk with yourself always. Mm. Like, or just not even, just listen to whatever your body or your gut or your inner monologue tells you. That's like number one. But then on the other hand, I feel that I am a recovering people pleaser. And for me, understanding that even though I fear something, I'm coming first out of the two of us. That was something new. Like, if I have this feeling that I don't want you to cross the line in the sand, and I have a strong feeling that I don't want you, but I'm a people pleaser, I would feel that if you want to close, if you want to cross, you still can cross it. I'll deal with it, you know? And I think for me, that is why you need to set boundaries and you need to understand. And it doesn't have to be aggressive. And I think that's what we are confusing.
Yes.
It can be something
or,
super
or a blocking.
Gentle. Yeah.
And you know what? Sometimes these tools are necessary because people just, like, if the person in front of you has no listening ability, you cannot act as if they do. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, you have to downgrade your toolbox, unfortunately. And, you know, I was speaking to a friend of mine who's an artist, and he's being kind of ripped off by a gallery, and he's still being super civil, and he's being super... You know, and there's something really honorable in what he's doing, but, you know, he could also kind of downgrade and be like, you know what, fuck y'all, and this is bullshit, and I don't have time to deal with this, right? And it's like, and I feel like in a way, when you say, I don't want to deal with this, I think that there is something that will haunt you. I just have this deep-rooted belief that when you say, I don't want to deal with this, it will come back.
Yeah, definitely. At one point, you need to deal with it.
Yes. Well, not that specific thing. I mean, that person might go, but it'll come in another form.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Because ultimately, when you put your hand up and you're like, nope, talk to the hand, figuratively or literally, what this is saying is, I do not have the skill set right now to deal with this level of difficulty that life is throwing at me. And you can put up these band-aids or crutches or whatever you want to call them, because in that moment you're just overwhelmed, and that is real, and people, you know, people have the level of skill that they have, but know that it'll come back.
Yeah, 100%.
And eventually you're going to have to deal with it, you know.
I think this is a good ending for this conversation. Thank you so much for being here.
All right, thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this episode was the last episode of our first season, so don't be afraid, we are coming back, but we are going for a little break right now. I would like to take this opportunity to say thanks to everybody who helped me make this happen, make In Search of Something Different a podcast where there's thousands of listeners right now. So first of all, big, big, big thank you for you, dear listener, who is here with me week by week and who give me feedback on what you liked and what you didn't, mainly what you liked. So thank you so much for that. And secondly, everybody who came on the podcast and talked about Tantra or talked about AI or talked about remote work or each topic that I'm super enthusiastic about. So these are pretty much the topics that I would have a conversation about when I sit down with my friends who are usually in search of something different. So I'm really happy with all the topics and all the hours spent by talking to these people. So big up for you guys, everybody who came to the podcast. And last but definitely not least, my coworkers. A special thanks to Boro, who helped me edit these episodes and helped me with the production. So yeah, thank you so much, everybody. And I see you back here in 2024. Exact dates coming soon. But until then, happy holidays and yeah, enjoy. Bye. You are listening to the In Search of Something Different podcast, where we talk about new ways and ideas on how we live, work, and connect. If you like this episode, don't forget to give us a 5-star rating as it helps in this world. And also, you can say hi on Instagram. You can find the show under In Search of Something Different. I'll come back to you soon with the next episode, but until then, don't forget to stay curious.